The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Wrestling to the Max. SmackDown. Review.
Good evening, afternoon, whenever you're listening, everybody. Welcome to the Wrestling to the Max SmackDown Live Review for April 16th, 2019. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One on W2M co-host, Brandon Fiskaping.
Hey.
Technically speaking, you can't be the Down Since Day One co-host because that would be Tony Acero over at the Raw Reaction.
Yes, of course.
We've been doing that show for a long ass time. I think we're about to hit 5 years, actually.
Oh, wow.
Jesus. That's what I'm saying. All right, so I apologize in advance for the brevity of tonight's episode. Unfortunately, real life commitments are getting in the way for me today. I do not have a ton of time, so I won't be especially talkative. I'll let Brandon give his thoughts. I'll chime in here and there as necessary. But this is going to be a somewhat abbreviated version of the SmackDown Live review. So let's get to it, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, our opening segment sees the Kevin Owens show, and he introduces out Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. They bring up the elephant in the room about Biggie's injury. And then the main talking points here, besides Kofi getting his reception from the Canadian crowd, in addition to Kevin getting his pop from his hometown fans as well, is that there is a tag team match announced between Kofi and Xavier versus Rusev and Nakamura a little bit later on. But since Big E is out, Kevin Owens wants in as the Big O, which apparently pissed off a New York wrestling connection independent wrestler named the Big O, who used to be a part of Zack Ryder's True Long Island Story YouTube show.
Huh.
He's less pleased about that, and he's threatening a lawsuit.
Apparently,
he actually owns the Big O trademark.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow.
So that could lead to some stuff going forward. We may not see him refer to us. Now, the Big KO would work just as fine.
Yeah, that could work.
I feel like that would be – and it fits in with this. Then again, I don't think this teaming's going to last long enough for it to matter anyway.
No. I mean, maybe they do it a few more times. Although I did see some people kind of speculating that this may be the impetus for a Big E turn, which I certainly hope not. But
No, Wilford, you cannot be on the show. That dog is always trying to put himself over.
He is. He really is.
Anyway, eventually, Xavier and Kofi come around to the idea of Kevin Owens being an honorary member of the New Day. In the back, we see Rusev and Nakamura watching the segment. We actually saw them watching it while it was happening, and it looked like Rusev was laughing because he's never been great at keeping character.
Mm-hmm.
When Cesaro offers to join them for a 6-man tag match to happen later on in the show. Overall, what did you think of the opening segment?
I liked the segment a lot. I thought the whole thing with KO, a lot of people said, oh, KO's one of those guys that, you know, you could never turn face, and he's so much better as a heel. He was great in this segment as a face, and it was really entertaining, really funny. He did a great job putting himself over, putting Kofi over. And while I'm disappointed we may not get the name the Big O anymore, I'm definitely hoping that KO sticks around with the New Day, at least for a little while, and, you know, they do something with him.
Depending on what happens with Big E, because E's probably out 3 to 6. I would assume closer to the 3 end of that because of it being, I guess it's not as severe as it would be if it were one of the actual tendons. I've personally torn my meniscus before. It's no fun, but it's a very easily recuperating. That being said, I don't know if Owens sticks around long enough to team with him, or if he's just using this to pigeonhole himself into an eventual title shot with Kofi, because I feel like that could be an easy way to go with it as well.
But then I would assume that KO's gonna turn heel again, which, I mean, yes, that is kind of KO's MO of, like, you know, betraying his allies all the time, but I would like to see a face KO run, at least for a little bit.
Our opening contest, scheduled for one fall.
One fall.
Sees Finn Balor in the Intercontinental, but that's all, folks, championship make their way over to SmackDown as he faces Ali, who lost his Mustafa.
It's still Mustafa.
Well, not according to the Chiron. But at least they didn't give away that Finn Balor was coming over early like they did with the Usos on Raw.
Yes.
Regardless. Ali up top missing the 450 splash, leading to Balor hitting the John Woo dropkick to send Ali careening into the turnbuckle in a very nicely done bump there by Ali. Mm-hmm. The coup de grace, top rope double stomp, finishes at 10 minutes and 20 seconds, non-title match. However, very strong performance here from Mustafa, and Balor gets to rebound from the loss that he took to Andrade on Raw.
Yeah, now it seems like the Andrade loss was kind of a sending off for Balor, since he's on SmackDown now. I kind of wish that they would have done something with this on Monday, even though for health reasons he was not able to be at Raw. I wish that they would have done, like, a pop-up where it said, basically like what they did with Cedric, where it says Samoa Joe going to Raw. because
I was going to say, I think it works better if he just shows up and chokes somebody out on Monday.
I get that, but it confused a lot of people, myself included, because it's like, wait, so SmackDown's going to have both mid-card titles now?
It came out during the course of the last few days that they did plan to move Samoa Joe over to Raw. It's just he had an issue with I think he got, like, really badly sick.
Yeah, I think I heard, like, he had the flu or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm. We replay the Bray Wyatt vignette from 2 weeks ago. We get a new Bray Wyatt vignette later on in the show with the doll sitting in the chair.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit later on. Wilford, you are not welcome on this show. Maybe on the kickoff, but this is serious business. We have to get through this.
Speaking of which,
the two of us, Eric and Jason, need to get together and discuss when we're doing that that podcast next week.
Oh, yes.
All right. Backstage, New Day wants Xavier and Kofi want Kevin Owens to break Big E's pancake-eating record. You would at least think they would give Kevin Owens some milk to wash down those dry ass pancakes.
Yeah, really. And they had the convenient commercial break to give him around about 2 minutes.
I personally enjoy a good pancake, but a proper pancake needs milk in order to help wash it down.
And butter.
See, I'm not a butter person.
Ah.
Okay. Now I will put some syrup on my pancakes, don't get me wrong.
I'm
not a butter.
I like my pancakes made in bacon grease and with butter.
Brandon Biscoping, poster child for diabetes. Charlotte's back on WWE television for the first time since WrestleMania. She takes on Carmella, and wouldn't you know it, once again, you win a battle royal, you turn into a jobber.
Yep.
Charlotte picks up the win with the figure eight, tapping Carmella out in 7.5 minutes here. Basic Charlotte-Carmella match, honestly. Nothing we didn't see between these two when they were feuding for over the SmackDown Women's title last year.
Just roles being reversed.
Well, I think Carmella's a more natural face than Charlotte is. I think Charlotte prefers to be a heel.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't think anyone really expected this match to go any other way because, you know, they're going to want to give Charlotte her momentum back and, you know, get her back up into the title picture sooner rather than later.
Post-match, Lars Sullivan arrives and takes out Truth. Two questions about Lars Sullivan, and then we'll move on real quick here. First of all, do you like the idea of moving him to SmackDown? I think it works because it gets him away from Braun Strowman, who's very similar build-wise, and allows for them to be monsters, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, if Braun wasn't going to be the big acquisition, it makes sense for Lars to be the monster on SmackDown while Braun is a monster on Raw.
Question number two, what do you think of the Dr. Bomb that Sullivan's using as kind of the follow-up to the freak accident now?
I'm okay with it.
I like the freak accident, but there are a lot of people that use like a move that's similar to that already in the WWE. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mojo's been using a Uranagi recently in the WWE as well.
No, Uranagi.
Longtime listeners of the show will realize that that's a throwback. I forgot to one fall, Charlotte and Shamel.
Fail.
Charlotte and Carmella. But that's, like I said, it's been a long week, people. Anyway. You popped me with the Uranagi. Thanks. The champ. Becky Two Belts. Becky Balboa. The woman of 1,000 nicknames these days.
Pretty much.
Comes out to talk about the SmackDown situation in the Superstar Shakeup. She talks about the fact that she was confronted by and will eventually face Lacey Evans for the SmackDown Women's title.
You mean the Raw Women's title?
Or for the Raw Women's title, yes. She is then interrupted by Ember Moon. And then Ember Moon is interrupted by Bayley. And Bayley is interrupted by the Iconics. Who are interrupted by... Are you sensing a pattern here?
Yes.
It's segments like this that make you wonder, just how many microphones does the WWE own?
Infinite.
Seriously. Anyway, all right. So what happens is, to break down the long and the short of it, Ember and Bayley call out Becky and win a shot at the SmackDown Women's title now that they're both on SmackDown. Bayley said that she left all of her hugs behind on Raw. And that she's now going to be a singles performer here on SmackDown, and she's coming after the women's title. They're interrupted by a pair of champions, the Iconic Two Belts, as Peyton Royce and Billie Kay talk about the fact that their titles are better than Becky Lynch's. Paige arrives, and she is interrupted by Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, which I did talk about last week when we did the SmackDown Live review. I said, watch them tease up an Absolution. Mm. However, instead of it being Absolution with Paige reuniting with Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, Paige instead debuts her new tag team, Asuka. Really? Asuka in a tag team? Okay, whatever. And Kairi Sane.
I mean, it's not like we haven't seen it before.
So we call up one Sky Pirate, but we leave the other in NXT.
I mean, I guess I get it because Io has only been there for less than a year. But I'm okay with it, but I would have preferred seeing Sky Pirates because they had an already established team name. They were already established as a team. So it would have worked better, I feel. But we'll see. We'll see how this works out.
Paige sends Asuka and Kairi into battle. A fracas breaks out as we go to commercial. When we come back, it's the Teddy Long special. It's a tag match.
Player.
Scheduled for?
One fall.
Go ahead.
First, before we talk about the match itself, the best part of this whole segment was just during the whole fracas was Becky just standing at one of the turnbuckles just watching like, You guys go ahead and battle amongst yourself. I'll just stand over here and watch.
And then she kind of just stepped to the ring and was like, okay, deuces, y'all.
Have fun. Yep, pretty much.
I'm out. I got champ business to handle.
Yep.
Anywho. The 8-woman tag match breaks down at the end, as these multiple people matches tend to do. Eventually, it leads to Asuka hitting a reverse DDT on Peyton Royce, because we've seen her use that move before. That made total sense. Whatever. Anyway. It sets up the insane elbow, and Kairi Sane pins Peyton Royce to set up Asuka and Kairi as the probable number one contenders to the Iconics women's tag team titles.
I mean, especially now with with Bayley and Sasha apparently broken up, there aren't really all that many real tag teams left. I mean, one of them even got broken up during the post-SmackDown shake-up stuff because Liv Morgan got moved over to Raw, so...
Liv got moved over to SmackDown.
Oh, excuse me, to SmackDown.
Well, you could still have Ruby Riott and Sarah Logan team up because it's true. Not like Ruby Riott's going to be taken seriously as a singles competitor anytime soon.
I mean, she should be, but, you know, you're not wrong.
What they should be and what they are doing are two very completely different things. Ask Luke Harper.
Very true.
We'll miss you, Luke.
Yeah.
B. Elite. B. Sorry. Had a moment. I'm good. Overall, what did you think of the tag match?
I mean, it was okay. You know, it did what it needed to do. It established that that Kairi and Asuka can work well together. It was pretty much just setting them up as the next challengers.
One assumes for Money in the Bank due to the fact that the women's tag team titles are there, although I wouldn't have been surprised to see Asuka in the Money in the Bank match itself for the women, but I guess now that she has the newly established team with Kairi, it doesn't make any sense for her to be in that match.
I think we'll probably see the... I'm assuming it'll be an 8-woman tag match. An 8-woman match, ladder match. I have a feeling it'll be the two women that we saw compete earlier on, Charlotte and Carmella, and then Bayley and Ember for SmackDown.
I could see that. You could do Ruby, Naomi, Natalya. And I don't know who the 8th would be because Mickey's over on SmackDown now, too, even though she didn't get television time.
It was just Naomi that got moved over to Raw, right?
Maybe Nikki Cross?
Yeah, because she's still tech. They haven't put her in any brand yet.
She hasn't officially been designated.
Yeah.
Hardy Boys talk about winning the tag team titles. There will be no rematch because the Usos got shipped over to Raw on Monday, given away in the before match that Rude and Gable were doing, who they then proceeded to break up as well. You know what? If this means Chad Gable gets to get an opportunity to be a singles wrestler, I am all for it, because that tag team with Rude was dead in the water. Mm-hmm.
And if Rude can get his momentum back.
It's a big if.
I know.
Speaking of people coming to SmackDown, Buddy Murphy moving away from 205 Live and getting an opportunity on one of the big shows. We talked about this when we did the 205 Live review last week, about the fact that we thought that Buddy Murphy was moving and that the better show for him to go to would be SmackDown. Mm-hmm. Here's the problem, though. Murphy had a distinct size advantage over most of his opponents on 205 Live.
Oh, yeah.
He will not have that same advantage on SmackDown.
No.
The question will be is, how well will Murphy's in-ring abilities translate to facing guys on SmackDown now that SmackDown's lost three of its better in-ring performers on the babyface side in AJ Styles, Rey Mysterio, and The Miz?
So, how do you like the what seems to be the trend that they're going towards with 205, where it's basically a transitional brand between NXT and the main roster for smaller guys?
I mean, are you surprised, though? It's not like Vince gives about the cruiserweights.
True.
I had to censor myself there.
Yeah.
Cruiserweights have never been Vince's modus operandi, even back to the junior heavyweight division back in the late 90s.
Very true.
It was treated as a joke. It was used as a gag to get Brian Lawler over as Jerry Lawler's kid.
Mm-hmm.
Which is sad because they have some of the best cruiserweight wrestlers, junior heavyweight wrestlers, call them whatever you want to call them, X division wrestlers, I guess, technically to an extent as well, in the world. It's just they don't take advantage of the division as properly as they could because of the fact that they're so focused on other things.
Yeah. I'm sure the two favorites for the Cruiserweight Classic are thanking their lucky stars that they didn't sign.
I mean, I feel like Zack Sabre is eventually going to end up in the WWE.
I think he's going to probably wait until Trips completely takes over.
I would probably agree with that. As far as Kota Ibushi goes, I don't know that Kota translates because he would see what happened to a guy like Shinsuke.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with that. And that's why I'm deathly afraid of what's going to happen to Kushida.
I feel like Kota's better off staying in New Japan and then coming over to the States and working AEW with his boys in the Elite.
Agreed.
All right. Main event time, 6-man tag scheduled for one fall.
One fall.
Man, it is really the night of the Teddy Long here. There was one singles match on
the show.
I
mean, that's the way it's been for the past few weeks.
There were two singles. I forgot about Balor and Ali.
I mean, that's the way it's been for the past couple of weeks now, where it's like pretty much every match has been either a, you know, 6 or 8-man tag match.
Well, you know what I think a lot of that has to do with, though, is the fact that everybody's bodies undergo a lot of wear and tear this time of the year, WrestleMania season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just an opportunity for people to recuperate.
I mean, honestly, it's kind of smart because, I mean, think about it. That's pretty much what New Japan does with their, you know, their Road 2 shows.
The wear and tear that a traditional superstar goes under, and especially in a singles match, such as the one that Balor and Ali had earlier there were some really, really stiff moves in that match.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I thought, it looked like for sure that Balor landed on Ali's shoulder with the coup de grace.
Mm-hmm.
So, having these multiple man matches allow people to only have to come in for moments of activity without having to extend themselves too thoroughly into an extended contest. And yes. I think that makes sense
coming out
of WrestleMania season and the build up to WrestleMania where you have your talent at its most raggedly run.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the show being up in Canada too, traveling becomes an issue.
Yes.
In the end, the 6-man tag match main event goes to the team of the new KO. The new show? Anyway. As a Kofi Kingston Trouble in Paradise leads to Rusev taking a stunner and selling it like he was Vince McMahon.
Yeah, that was a really bad sell.
I think it was on purpose.
Oh,
I think it was the McMahon cell.
Okay.
Where Owens picks up the pin on Rusev at 12 minutes and 20 seconds, about 9 of which was shown with the commercial break involved.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Owens fit in well enough with the New Day here. I think part of me is just, I don't know how I feel about Owens in this spot as kind of the thrown-in third member of the New Day. Like, I get that Kevin's having fun with it, and I'm sure that this is something that Kevin's kid loves.
Mm-hmm.
As Owens' kid is a known fan of the New Day. I'm sure this is something that Owen loves. But my issue with it here is that it just kind of seems like Kevin Owens is a space holder for Big E.
Oh, I mean, he definitely is. This isn't anything, you know, permanent or anything like that, but it's a nice little fun way of not only, you know, giving the New Day a third member again, but also solidifying KO's face turn and, you know, having some fun with it.
Your main event segment scheduled for one promo.
One promo.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't usually get a response to that one. Sees Vince McMahon come out in Montreal because they haven't beat this into the ground over the last decade and a half. 2 decades. Jesus, it's been 20 years.
Yep.
Holy shit. The views and opinions of Harry Broadhurst do not necessarily. Yes, they do. It's been 20 years.
Over 20 years.
Coming up on 22. Anyway, he then talks about the fact that this is the biggest acquisition in SmackDown Live's history. A man that he rarely puts a stamp of approval on anybody in this company. But he's going to put a stamp of approval here. Sorry, dry mouth. And he introduces Elias. I actually called this on the reaction. I said that I wouldn't be surprised to see Elias move over to SmackDown. Part of it being with him feuding with The Undertaker, Undertaker's more commonly established with SmackDown, so I think it makes more sense in that regard.
Yeah, I could see that.
What do you think about Elias moving to SmackDown?
I mean, I'm okay with it. It gives him new opportunities. It gives him new challenges. We'll see how this first feud goes. But, I mean, I'm okay with it.
I'm going to need you to give me a second here, so go ahead and discuss what happens next.
Yeah, so next, after Elias comes out, says that Vince McMahon knows what he knows, and that's that WWE stands for a walk with Elias. He starts trying to play something. And then what a lot of people, myself included, who a lot of people thought was going to be the real biggest signing, does end up coming out, is on SmackDown now, and that is one Roman Reigns. He comes out, Superman punches Elias, then proceeds to Superman punch Vince, and then he's about to leave, and then goes back to spear Elias as well. And then he says, SmackDown is my yard now.
Okay. I think I'm good.
Okay.
I can take it from here. First of all, I think he hit Vince so hard that Vince thinks the Viking experience is a good idea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, thank you for agreeing that that's complete and utter garbage.
It's a dumb name, but it is what it is. They'll get over of their own talent rather than their name, so I'm not really that worried about them.
We'll see. I hope you're right.
Hansen's a 350-pound dude who can do a moonsault. Ray Rowe might be one of the strongest people I've ever had the opportunity to work with. I'm not worried about them. All right, let's talk about Roman Reigns over to SmackDown here. Obviously, this is a move to placate Fox.
I'm guessing Fox
wanted Roman. Here's my problem, though. I feel like there were better people for this spot. And I think there could have been a complete and total – the way that I would have done this here is – I mean, obviously, take this booking with a grain of salt because I'm just a fan. You know, it's not like I get paid for this or anything. Vince comes out and says he rarely puts a seal of approval on anybody. Except there's one man that he's put the seal of approval on in the past and that he still stands by that decision to this day. The newest member of the SmackDown Live roster, Drew McIntyre. McIntyre comes out. McIntyre does his thing. He talks about it there. Then you could have McIntyre and Roman interact once again, move both of them over to SmackDown. But at the same time, they didn't really settle things at WrestleMania. So you could build up to a blow-off match with them and then let them go their separate ways on the blue roster and get them away from their collective fan, their collective stablemates on Raw, Seth and The Shield for Roman, and then the dead weight that is Baron Corbin and Bobby Lashley for Drew McIntyre.
I mean, that would have been an interesting little throwback for them to do. I would have liked that. I am glad that they went the route of having it be Elias who he announced and then have Roman appear out of nowhere. Because if it would have been Vince saying this is the biggest acquisition and it being Roman, it would have been bad.
Well, Roman's already starting to catch heat again from the audience.
Oh, I can hear it, but, you know, that would have made the heat go up tenfold.
No, that's what I'm saying. Part of the issue there is having Vince just come out and announce Roman would bring those boobirds back in full force.
Oh, definitely.
Vince kind of giving the stamp of approval to Elias, I think, helps Elias because it's pretty well known that the McMahons are fans of Elias anyway. I mean, you've kind of seen Stephanie and Shane's interaction with Elias over on Raw as well. So it's not really a surprise to see Elias in this kind of a spot. The thing that I worry about is that Elias becomes McMahon proxy fodder for a feud with Roman, and that does nothing to help Elias.
But like we talked about before, it seems like Elias is one of those characters that you can do pretty much anything to, and his heat never goes away.
There's a level of Teflon with Elias, I'll agree with that. But do you also want to risk alienating any of the positivity that you built up by with Roman by having him feud with somebody as popular as Elias is either?
I'll agree with you there. Like I said, I think the main thing when it comes to Roman to kind of push back the potential of people booing him again is have him lose some.
Well, that's one of the reasons I picked McIntyre at WrestleMania, because I thought that there was a better story to tell with Roman rebounding.
As did I.
Than having a victory.
As did I.
All right, real quick, before we get to our overall review, rating, and one-word review here for SmackDown Live, who do you think got the better of the brand split? Who do you think got the better of the Superstar Shakeup, excuse me?
I think I'm going to say SmackDown just because the women's division is so much better over on SmackDown than it is on Raw.
I think SmackDown got hosed.
Really?
I think Raw got the better of it. Yes. Because SmackDown's mid-card has been absolutely decimated.
Yeah. Oh, I'll agree with that.
You lost Ray. You lost Andrade. You're losing Samoa Joe. You're losing AJ Styles. You're losing Miz. Those are five marquee performers that you counted on a week-in, week-out basis for SmackDown Live.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, you're replacing Joe with Balor, that's kind of a wash.
Yeah.
AJ with Roman, I think, helps you from a storytelling perspective, but not an in-ring perspective, and SmackDown has always been the in-ring show that hurts SmackDown.
True.
Losing the Usos absolutely decimates the SmackDown Live tag team division.
Now, yes, I'll agree with that. Now, one thing I just thought of, and I know this is probably wishful thinking, but Fox has been known to, well, for one, with all the rumors have been saying that Fox is in the driver's seat when it comes to SmackDown. But also, Fox has been willing to take some chances with things more than other networks. Could they be potentially considering going back to an edgier product and laying the reins off of Roman?
I think you can do that in small doses. If it becomes an every week thing, it overstays its welcome.
Well, of course, but, you know.
I still think that there were better choices to come over to SmackDown. And honestly, I was surprised that the big announcement for SmackDown Live wasn't Brock Lesnar.
I was kind of half expecting that too. But at the same time, I'm still holding out hope that he'll be gone for a while.
I think that when he comes back, he comes back to SmackDown.
Oh, definitely, because it'll be on Fox.
And they have experience with Lesnar through the UFC, so they're going to want that star power there.
Exactly.
Scale of 1 to 10, Bisco, where do you fall for this episode of SmackDown?
I'll give it a 7. There were some good moments. The swerve was interesting with Vince and everything. Seeing all the moves, especially in the women's division, was interesting. But nothing too crazy. Nothing really that popped out at you.
I'm right around a 7 as well, which is a little bit lower than what I gave Raw. I gave Raw a 7.5 because I actually really enjoyed Raw from an in-ring perspective. I think that the traveling schedule and especially the conditions for a lot of people in regards to the situation in New Jersey with the snowfall and stuff that delayed flights and stuff hurt Raw's ability to tell a full-on story, plus the illnesses of people like Samoa Joe and other things happening in that regard. The issue that I have for SmackDown coming out of this is how is SmackDown going to rebound from losing a lot of its marquee building blocks for its storylines?
Yeah.
You no longer have the Usos to help control your tag team division for you. You're no longer going to have Samoa Joe, who is becoming a dominant force over SmackDown. You no longer have AJ Styles, who is literally the selling point of SmackDown is the house that AJ Styles built. You no longer have The Miz on SmackDown as a guy who's week in, week out, consistently reliable for a good to great promo and a solid match. You no longer have the high flyers like Rey and Andrade, who bring in that Lucha Libre crowd that SmackDown was traditionally known for. We'll see how SmackDown is able to bounce back here. I think that they got the worst end of the superstar shakeup here, but we've said that before, and there's one thing that we can say about the Blue Brand is that they tend to make chicken salad out of chicken, well, you know.
Well, I think one thing that you have to think about, too, though, is what, you know, what a lot of these moves are leading up to. And a lot of the moves for SmackDown give it that sports feel that Fox wants.
Strongly disagree with that. Because if you wanted to have that sports feel that Fox wants, you leave guys like Rey, Andrade, Samoa Joe, and AJ Styles on SmackDown.
Joe, I'll agree with AJ. I'll agree with Rey and Andrade, no.
Agree to disagree here. One word review, Brandon. What do you got?
Progression. It's setting up everything. It's getting all the pieces where they need to be with the superstar shakeup. And we'll just have to wait and see where it goes from here.
My one-word review is indifference. Because I'm not sure where they're going, so I'm going to give it an opportunity to play out before I make judgment on the decisions that were made on who to send over to SmackDown and who they took away. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I think it's going to hurt SmackDown in the long run, but I'm willing to give them an opportunity to see what Creative is able to do with SmackDown. I will say that I do trust the team of the writing team for SmackDown more than I trust the writing team for Raw.
Agreed.
So we'll see what happens. They, like I said, they've been known to make chicken salad out of chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Snuffleupagus. Speaking of snuffleupaguses, I'm still snuffleupagusing over here myself. You guys probably heard me go into a coughing spell over there during the course of the show. Needless to say, it has not been the best week for me. I apologize for the brevity of today's SmackDown Live review. However, hopefully back and better than ever next week here on the show. In addition to the SmackDown Live review next week, Brandon, you and Cedric will have Monday Night Raw as well, will you not?
Yes, indeed.
And then the big thing for me and Brandon to discuss as well for next week is the draft preview episode of the kickoff. Probably the Wednesday night before the first round of the draft. We'll talk potential busts, potential bargains, potential teams that will trade up, teams that might trade down, and what we would like to see our team do. We'll figure out the entire format during the course of this week with Eric and Jason, but we'll have that for you guys next week. And then in 2 weeks here on the kickoff, we'll have your draft breakdown as well, how we thought our teams did, who we thought the biggest winners and losers were, and we'll pick our fantasy rookie team much the same way we did last year.
Yep.
And see which one of us can decide how our rookies turn out. I believe my first round rookie pick last year was Baker Mayfield. Suck it, suck it, suck it.
Well, I'm pretty sure my and Jason's first round pick were, or I think I picked Saquon, who won Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, but how many people saw Baker having the season that he did last year?
True. I'll give you that.
And now they've given him even more weapons. So that means he's going to be feeling even more dangerous in Cleveland.
Oh, yeah.
God, the Browns might not suck this year. I don't know if I'm comfortable living in that world.
This is going to be a weird year.
Facts. All right, you can check that out here on the W2M Network as well as The Kickoff with Harry Broadhurst. That would be me. Brandon Biskobing. That would be him. Eric Watkins and Jason Teasley. Eventually, how the war was won-ish, maybe, possibly. Get off your ass, Brandon!
Yes.
I'm going to keep busting your balls about that until we actually get a shot.
I know this.
I'm like, Jason, I ain't letting go of that bone.
Fair enough.
Make sure you guys check out W2M.net for everything related to video games, sports, entertainment, wrestling. Well, not so much wrestling these days. We got the podcast.
Except for us.
Yeah, really. But there are video game stuff there. There's going to be more football stuff there, more NFL content, and more college football content as we get closer to the season. Where can people find you online, Brandon?
Online on Twitter at Bisco_GothamSN and on Facebook in Wrestling to the Max and all of the other wrestling groups and everything.
HEB the Eagle on Twitter. Admittedly, I barely use it, but that's where you can find me. I'm also on The Chair Shot on Facebook, as well as I write for thechairshot.com. My United We Stand review should go up sometime this weekend, we hope. In addition, I will be covering Impact Wrestling's homecoming to get everybody ready for Rebellion at the end of this month as well. He's Brandon Biskoping. I'm Harry Broadhurst. And this has been the Wrestling to the Max SmackDown Live Review for April 16th, 2019. We'll talk to you guys next week here on the W2M Network. Available on all of your favorite podcast listening devices such as iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Spreaker. I screwed that bit up, son of a bitch.
Hmm.
You know what? Glacier's still a dick.
And he's all elite, apparently, now.
We'll fix that joke for you next week here on the SmackDown Live Review. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Ugh.